$28.99. Open up a work session on $28.99, and we'll take testimony. I don't have a sign-up sheet. So whoever wants to start.
Oh, we're not voting on this.
Well, it's a
come on up.
We're in a work session now?
Yes, Mr.
Technically, that's what we got to do, I guess. Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are scheduled for a work session, and it's the chair's prerogative to call people up for expert testimony during a work session. You have two amendments before you, the dash twos and dash threes to House Bill 2899. They were given to me at about 20 till 9 this morning, so I haven't had a chance to go through them. Anyway, it's at this time the chair's prerogative as to who the chair calls up. I would maybe recommend, Mr. Chair, that you call up the people that were in the work group that worked out the amendment as directed by Representative Garrard.
Which amendment is that?
Which amendment was that? Work? Two or three?
I have no idea. I
was two or three. Well, the work group come up and maybe we'll figure it out as we go along.
The blind leading the whole thing.
It's like government at work.
So that would be John Lilly.
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Lilly, Assistant Director for the Division of State Lands, and as sometimes happens, I drew the short straw, if you will, and I guess I get first. While I did not lead the work group, I certainly was a participant in it. Joining me is Phil Scholes, wetland consultant, who was very instrumental with the work group. Mr. Nick Coffey, another consultant from the Salem area, had been asked by Chair Gerard to head up the work group. And I don't see Mr. Coffey in the room yet this morning.
He won't be here today.
What you have before you are two amendments to 2899, and they are nearly identical, but for one aspect. The dash twos
Mr. Chair, if I may, yes. Representative Richardson, who's here now, the dash twos and dash threes came from his office. Maybe it would help for the good representative to explain what is going on.
I'm ready.
Okay,
go for it.
Thank you. I had the opportunity to meet with Mr. Lilly, and we reviewed a number of proposed changes that work group had come up with and also some concerns that I had. And the difference between the dash two amendments and dash three amendments is one sentence, and that is on page 16 of the dash twos. As you recall, the last time we discussed this bill, I had a concern about wording that could have been confusing to local governments. And so I'm now looking on page 16 of the dash two amendments on line 19, where it now said, initially it said in the dash ones, local governments may not review wetland delineation reports for the purpose and so forth. And my concern was to say that to local governments cannot even review something, it that's confusing, and it wasn't real clear to me that how limited it was. The dash two amendments now say local governments may not approve wetland delineation reports for the purpose of defining state jurisdiction, and this is to protect the state from any confusion that local government might add additional requirements on in dealing with wetlands within their jurisdictions when this matter really is a state land use matter. And so this is just a statement to make it clear that local governments cannot approve wetland delineations for the purpose of defining state jurisdiction, because state jurisdiction is something that the state has already defined. Now, the dash three amendments just delete that sentence completely if this committee has ongoing concerns with the way it's written presently. And so, it's, in other words, it's not worth messing with. If this is causing ongoing concerns, it's not a required sentence for this bill to go on through. And so the LC went ahead and drafted it with and without. My own feeling is that it's very clear what is being intended now by changing review to approve, in that local governments are not going to have the ability to approve a state, you know, something in state jurisdiction, and so it can stay in as far as I'm concerned. And unless anyone else on the committee has problems with that, I would suggest that we review the dash two amendments as the set of amendments that we would want to consider for passage today.
Dennis, you want to make a motion on that?
Yes, I'm ready.
And then we can discuss it.
Okay. So we're going to... Okay.
These amendments just showed up. Are we fixing to vote on these amendments?
Representative, my intent is to make a motion on this and then discuss it. Is that the normal procedure, or...
Well, if you wanted to take
any, work session.
I would think if you want to take testimony, you would do that before the motion. If you're ready to have us just discuss a vote, then we'd make the motion and then have discussion by the
testimony first.
I have a little problem with voting on it today with all stuff. I suppose the answer is vote no if I can just look at it.
Did you look over the dashboard?
Okay.
Because we can focus on the
specific. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you turn to page 16 on both dash twos and dash threes, line 19 to 21 is a paragraph which was referenced by Representative Richardson, and I believe that is the only difference between the two amendments. And what the chair in our discussion, his intention was to decide whether to work off the dash twos or dash threes, and that was the motion, not to go ahead and adopt everything sent to the floor.
Okay, so let's say testimony.
Fine. We're dealing with dash two then.
Well, why don't we just take testimony on the bill? We don't need any motions to adopt amendments. We just need to find out what's in front of us.
Okay. Let's take the testimony.
Again, good morning, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Lilly, Assistant Director for the Division of State Lands. The Division and a number of other people have worked over the last weeks since we first were before you under House Bill 2431. We've worked as a working group to deal with a number of amendments to the wetland mitigation banking law as well as the removal fill law. What you have before you today are amendments to both of those provisions of statute. And in sections 1 through 11, roughly speaking, not knowing exactly how they roll out in the dash twos and dash threes, but at any rate, a good part of the first part of the first half of this bill deals with changes to the wetland mitigation banking regulations and statute, and changes to the wetland mitigation bank revolving fund. The second half of the bill deals with changes in process and procedures and application criteria for issuance of a removal fill permit. A little bit of history on this. The removal fill law has been in place since the late 60s. The wetland mitigation banking statutes and the associated statutory changes that came with them came about in about 1989 or so under Senate Bill 3 and one or two sessions thereafter. It's been some time then since we've looked at harmonizing both the mitigation banking and revolving fund statutes with the removal bill permitting statutory requirements. And so that's one of the things that this group did. They brought the practical and pragmatic background of wetland consultants, mitigation bankers, the agency, and other interests to the table to kind of look at how we needed to fine-tune this measure or these two laws. And as a result, I suppose if this happened during the interim, this would be pre-session filed as a bill that would we'd be here telling you this is a housekeeping measure. But largely because of the opportunity that was presented with earlier legislation, this is a housekeeping measure of sorts. It is is an attempt to fine-tune two existing laws. I think Mr. Scholes wanted to talk about some of the specifics of the changes and some of the maybe the policy implications behind them. I would point out that one of the litmus tests that the division has applied to legislation affecting removal fill programs in wetlands this session has been whether or not the changes would have an effect on the state's ability to continue with the permit streamlining process under what's known as the state programmatic general permit and 404 assumption. These are two efforts that have been underway for some time to consolidate state and federal permitting at the state level. This bill strengthens that effort, does not take anything away from that effort. This bill, we think, provides doesn't lower the bar to environmental protection. It keeps the bar right where it is. It makes a number of things clearer for both the agency to operate under as well as the regulated public and the interested parties that watch over and protect wetlands and waterways of our state.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, does the agency have an opinion about these amendments?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, we're in support of the amendments. There are a few word tweaks that we could put in to make it perfect, but as it stands today, it is satisfactory to us.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Which version are you referring to?
Well, either version is acceptable, Representative Rosenbaum.
Either two or three?
Either two or three, yes, sir. There is question about... as Representative Richardson has pointed out, there is a key difference or a minor difference between the two, and there's a reference to local governments may not approve wetland delineation reports for the purpose of defining state jurisdiction or for carrying out provisions of this removal fill law. In our discussion in the work group, and maybe Mr. Scholes can add into this in a moment, in the discussion in the work group, there was concern that the workload of the division in reviewing these wetland delineation reports was getting bogged down a bit by requirements that local government was putting out and asking citizens to submit delineation reports to the agency when there was no intent to follow them up with a permit application. It does take some time and effort to review these reports and make sure they're right. This was an attempt to maybe carve out a segment of work that's appropriate for local government without getting into the without bogging the agency's workload down. So we could accept either version. I suppose the lighter-handed version, it would be dash 3, subsection 5 on page 16, lines 19 through 21, give us adequate prioritization for workload. And so I believe that we could work with local government and say that we're going to give our priority for our limited resources to reviewing wetland delineation reports that are oriented towards processing removal fill permit applications. Long answer, but bottom line is we could live with either one. Probably the better, lighter-handed approach of the dash threes might be a little preferable.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Committee, I'd like to try to settle on one of these amendments. Do we want number three, or how do you feel about it? Any comments from all of the committee members?
Just a follow-up question.
Yes.
It's the department's position that it'd be better to have that language just out of there completely. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, we're comfortable. If it were removed, if we went with the dash threes, we'd be okay with that.
Is that your choice between the two?
Yes, sir. That would be my choice at this time.
Representative Green,
I haven't gotten only halfway through it, but there are a couple things that are just sort of minor questions I'd like to ask about How do you determine the meaning of the statement that the Division of State Land shall solicit but not be bound by comments? Okay, that's page 7, line 7 through 8, and it would probably be on either of them, although I'm looking at
Representative Greenwich, my name is Phil Scholes. I'm part of the work group, and I think I was probably the person behind that particular comment there. The concern has been that in the public review process, many extraneous issues are brought up. In this case, it has to do with mitigation banking, approval of their mitigation banking instrument. And so regulatory agencies often bring up issues that might be fisheries related but not wetlands related. And we're not saying you can't have those comments in the record, but that the agency itself would not be bound to comments that are not pertinent to the actual thing that they're supposed to be approving. In this case, it was a mitigation bank instrument.
Follow-up, sir. But it doesn't say can ignore non-pertinent comments. It simply says it can ignore any comments.
That was not the intent. The intent was to try to give the agency the ability to separate relevant versus non-relevant issues.
I follow up a little bit more. It used to say what you've taken out is in consultation with. And apparently that was offensive.
It wasn't that it was offensive. It was an issue that regulatory agencies would often bring in issues that were not necessarily directly related to what was being mattered as a decision, and we still had to respond to issues often costing thousands of dollars, if not more than that, to resolve issues that were more of a personal agenda rather than relevant to the application or the mitigation bank instrument. We were definitely not trying to eliminate relevant comments.
So the purpose now is you can ask people for opinions and then you can officially ignore them without having to respond to them in any way, even if they're relevant.
Let me look at the language specifically.
Shall solicit but not be bound by, as opposed to in consultation with, on lines 7 through 9.
I believe that your interpretation could be accurate. So I think as a work group, we're very interested in modifying that couple of words not to give the division the ability to excuse relevant comments.
Mr. Chair?
I think we could almost be bound. We could almost be happy with just striking the language, but not bound by, just that they'll solicit the comments.
I don't, Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess I don't really see that this is any different from the normal process when an agency is soliciting input on administrative rules or anything else. I mean, there's always an opportunity for comment, but that doesn't ever mean that they're bound by what the comments would be. And comments could be completely diametrically opposed to each other, and so I don't really see that this is a huge departure from what we would do normally.
Well, I would need to ask people who know more than I do whether in consultation with refers to a specific process that needs to be followed. Is there a legal context for that in consultation with that we're now throwing out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, I think the word in consultation, or the two words in consultation within the statute here, do not have any particular special meaning other than the meaning normally given them. There's no, it's not referring a particular legal process. I have a slightly different take on these terms, but not be bound by. I believe that it's stating clearly that it's ultimately it's the division's decision as to what action to take, and that the comments of a particular agency are not overriding to the agency's decision.
And before they were?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlink, no, sir. Before they were not. The agency still has the in this context, the agency would still have the limit of decision-making that the statute allows, but there may be the perception, sir, that agencies commenting have greater great persuasive authority over the final outcome or the final decision. And I think maybe that the work group, in their struggling with trying to bring balance into these discussions, felt that wording such as be not bound by was an attempt to rebalance the discussion.
May I pursue a different area, sir? I have on page 12, section 12, or item 12, this is not section 12. There's a definition of practicable. Now, is that definition breaking new legal ground? Is that, I mean, I know we spent a floor session arguing about what scientific means, even though there's common definitions different than what was in the bill we debated, but is practicable commonly defined somewhere else? Or,
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenwood,
make this up out of your fertile brain.
Well, some things we do, sir, but not this one particular thing. Actually, it's plagiarized from a couple of sources. Number one, a memorandum of agreement between the Corps of Engineers and EPA in how the mitigation guidelines are to be applied for purposes of the Clean Water Act included a definition of practicable, which is used in what is commonly referred to as the 404B1 guidelines.
February 6, 1990.
Yes, sir. And so the definition that you find in the Dash 3 amendments follows very closely in meaning, if not precision, to that what you'll find in that MOA. Secondly, I did some research in other states and looked into their statutes in terms of wetland regulations, and this term practicable is used in at least one other state, Wisconsin, and it's very the terminology is similar. The application meaning are the same, while there may be some minor differences in wording, is the application and that is essential.
We don't have cultural values and other things that we've added to the ESA.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Committee, I'd really like to settle on one of these amendments, then, and maybe number three, and then maybe go from there and hear what other testimony if they want, and proceed to where we're going with the bill. Mm-hmm. So, Representative,
I make a motion that the Dash 3 amendments be amended to House Bill 2899.
Representative Richardson moves that the Dash 3 amendments, or moves the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2899. Any further discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm delighted to have the Dash 3 amendments on the table for discussion, but I'm really not prepared to vote on either of them if I've had a chance to explore these issues. I mean, I will vote yes to this motion, but okay, and I'll wait to see what the intention is.
Well, and we're not going to work the rest of the bill today.
Okay, so great. No, then I feel very
I'm just trying to get that in there.
Knowing what it is we're talking about is always better than not knowing.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Friedland.
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Excused.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Zahner?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Chair
Gerard? Excused. The Dash 3s have been adopted. We're still in work session. Anybody wants to testify? We're happy to let anybody testify on this bill that wants to.
Yeah. Let's see if there's anything else. Can I direct a couple more questions?
Please.
Just to clarify these amendments, Mr. Lilly, there are definitions on page 16 relating to the United States Army Corps of Engineers Wetlands Delineations Manual. Is it correct that Oregon uses the same definition that the federal government does, or is Oregon's more liberal or more restrictive?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, the definition of wetlands is embodied in state statute. It is the same as what is used for federal law purposes. We also have adopted by rule the Corps of Engineers 1987 manual in our jurisdictional determination rules. So this provision in the Dash 3 amendments would codify what has been the state's practice. So the 1987 manual would be what we would continue to use.
Do you have any follow-up?
Please.
Also, I'd like to draw your attention to page 11, a new subsection 6, which relates to the term functional attributes. And it says, functional attributes means ecological characteristics or processes of wetlands such as fish habitat, wildlife habitat, water quality, and water storage. I understand the second part of that sentence. I'm a little bit confused by what is meant by ecological characteristics, and I'm wondering if that definition could be expanded to mean such things as aesthetic issues, view, setbacks, those kinds of things, or if you could kind of explain what is meant by ecological characteristics.
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, during the work group session that we had a couple of weeks ago where there was considerable conversation about the definition of functional attributes, some of the aspects of some of the qualities that you described, aesthetics, open space, what have you, setbacks, were in an earlier version. And as a result of that discussion, the group decided that the current what you have before you best describes functional attributes, and that those other matters or other issues or factors that you describe might lend themselves more into the description of functional values. The value of a wetland as an open space is something that each one of us place different importance on. Ecological characteristics, I believe, at least in my opinion, is oriented towards where that wetland sits within the landscape, how it relates to other aspects of the environment, the upland environment that's adjacent to the wetland, the interaction between the fish and the wildlife in the area. That is what I believe that we're talking about here in terms of ecological characteristics.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, further discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenlee.
May I refer you to page 17 of the Dash 3? This is in reference to determining whether or not a permit shall be issued. The director should consider all of the following. I suppose not equally, but they need to be in the mix. We're back to the all practical mitigation to reduce the adverse effects. And it's making the statement now about if off-site mitigation is proposed, the applicant should document the impractability of on-site. This goes back to the practicable definition before. Is that right? And impractical, I suppose, means not practical on that basis. This provides a bias towards on-site mitigation first. Is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, that is correct.
And that essentially continued on to Section 5, which follows immediately, and to provide mitigation for the reasonably expected adverse impacts in project development. So, I mean, the notion is that mitigation is supposed to be built into the formula based on what can logically be expected. Is that how this works?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, that's basically correct. Yes, sir.
Representative,
thank you, sir.
I'm thinking maybe like to bring one of the legal beagles up from legislative. We've got some time, and if we have some questions, what's your thought?
I'd be more comfortable. Do you know whether there's anybody planning on speaking in opposition to this set of amendments?
Is there anybody? I guess not.
Right.
So we take all the time you want. If you want us to bring somebody up.
No, I think we're getting, I'm just, you know, reading through this in public here, which makes it real interesting to do.
I have a question if you want to keep reading.
Go ahead,
Mr. Lilly, I want to get to the bottom of why we're doing this.
Yeah. What's the problem?
Will these amendments in this bill speed up the process for allowing a developer to work through the morass of wetland regulation, which has been such a detriment to development in the past?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, I have a short answer, but I think the person who is best suited to really answer that question would be someone who works with developers, and that might be Mr. Scholes. My answer would be this bill provides for a greater certainty in a process for all the parties involved. Secondly, one change that these dash threes would make is it would shorten the time period in which the agency has to do the completeness review. Current law says we have 40 days. This bill would shorten that 10 days to 30 days would be the maximum we could take for a completeness review. So that in and of itself would shorten time frames.
It would also reduce the time for the public notice from 45 days to 30 days. But the majority of these amendments, this sort of fine-tuning housekeeping, really clarifies where we've had some problems in the past. In the past, we've had some issues with whether or not someone could buy credits from a mitigation bank. And this simply makes it a more clear path for them, for both the division as well as for the applicant, the developer, to know whether or not they're going to get an approval for going into a mitigation bank. So it helps that out quite a bit. There are some other things that add certainty for those of us in the wetlands profession by having some standards written in there regarding the 1987 Wetland Delineation Manual. That gives us some assurance that there will not be something surprised on the profession without having gone through some kind of real big process to adopt something new. And there's some other things in here relating for the DEQ. Normally would have 75 days to review, and they would only have that 75 days under some circumstances, which they have been discussed with, and they are comfortable with at this time. So we've gotten a lot of feedback in trying to just sort of take out a few of the kinks. There's always room for improvement, but having been working on this from the beginning, I think we've gotten through a lot of compromises here to make some fine-tuning that I think we all will feel betters the process. I would add one other thing, which is that House Bill 529, or Senate Bill 529 from the last session, was about essentially creating a little more certainty in the permitting process. And a lot of the complaints we've had about Division of State Lands or the wetland permitting process really has been cleaned up a lot by that bill that was passed last session. And this just sort of tacks on a few additional improvements. So I think if I can speak on behalf of a lot of my clients, the permitting process actually is better today than it was 2 years ago, and it will get a little bit better with this.
Earlier in the session, we had a discussion about overlap between the Corps of Engineers and Division of State Lands. Will this also help solve some of that, kind of relating to what Representative Richardson had to say, and who would control that, Division of State Lands or the Corps? Are you guys still in a little battle?
Mr. Chair, we continue to work with the Corps of Engineers, and we have hopes that very soon, within this calendar year, we will receive statewide programmatic general permit, which will streamline projects for probably about 50-60% of the projects that are in the state will go through a single permitting process with DSL as the lead agency on that. This bill, I think, I guess I have to follow on to what Phil says. This bill is organic to the state's program, and as we work at improvements in the state's program, both to maintain conservation of wetlands and waterways, as well as make the process more certain and efficient, that only helps us in our efforts to assume the overall permitting from the Corps of Engineers. If people in Oregon are satisfied that the program that the state has is delivering certainty, consistency, and efficiency in conservation, then that's the best approach in terms of trying to consolidate state and federal permitting at the state level.
Representative Greenlee.
couple more. I love organic, too. That's nice. I need to write that one down. May I refer you to page 22 now of the dash threes, line 22-23? This says that one of the considerations is whether the fill is compatible with the acknowledged comprehensive plan and land use regs for the area. And then it says, or can be conditioned on a future local approval to meet this criterion. Would you help me with that one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlink, I'm very glad that you asked about this one. Maybe Mr. Stewart would like to come and speak to this. He was part of pulling this wording together. What this means is in my interpretation, is that...
He's not coming forward, you notice.
He wasn't invited.
Well...
We've been trying to keep him out of that chair pretty effectively.
My interpretation of this is that, and the application would be, when, as the director is looking at an application, it's our job to determine whether or not the proposed fill and the project there that it encompasses is going to be compatible with the acknowledged plan. Sometimes we run into situations where the local government says, we can tell you that it's compatible, but we don't know about there's another local permit that's needed, and the applicant hasn't applied for that permit yet from the local government. But we're working up against a 90-day time frame to make a permit decision. So our choice is tell the applicant to go away and extend and have him agree to extend the permitting process, or make a permit decision, which could be a denial, or condition the permit on our best judgment as to whether or not the conditional use permit is going to be successful at the local level. This provision, as I read it, provides us with that authority to balance the likelihood that a future approval would be forthcoming from the local land use body, and would allow us to condition a permit accordingly.
Right, if I may follow. So you would issue the permit, and you would say, but this is conditional on the successful application for a conditional use permit in the county.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlink, that's precisely what we would do. I do have some concern about how broadly one might read the three terms here, future local approval. You know, for example, if the proposal before the agency is to provide for a fill for some project 20 or 30 years out that's very highly speculative and maybe placed in what's now a natural resource zone, could this be twisted to benefit that kind of situation? I would hope not. I would hope that we could weigh the likelihood that approval would be reached, the term of our permit, which tend to be 1 to 5 years in length, balance it out with other factors of that nature.
And just one more, if I may, Mr. Chair, I think I'm done. Well, I do want to ask them while I'm looking at that. We heard a statement on the floor of the House yesterday that a cow print with rainwater in it can be defined as a wetland. Is that part of the official definition of a wetland?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlink, if you really want me to respond, I will.
Yeah, I do.
If the cow is standing in a wetland, well, sure.
No, but if the cow is not?
But if it's just a cow print in a wet spot where the water congregates, it would still need to pass all the other criteria in terms of hydrology, soils, and plant material. Just the depression in the ground with water in it, be it made by a tractor, an animal, or a man, or a cow or a man, doesn't make it a wetland.
We could take that to the mitigation bank. Eh? The last question I have, sir, is on page 29. This section 20 is what I think you were testifying is the clear route. Is that what that's about?
Yes.
This gives a clear route to...
This language, well, not this particular language, but a sort of a previous type of language within a different part of the statute dealing with mitigation bank, and by putting it in this section of the statute, it now applies across the board to all permitting, not just the mitigation banking. So it's sort of better suited now where it's located than where it is currently in the statute. And it's been fine-tuned to better reflect our standards we use today than when it was originally put together.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Close work session on 2899.